This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 30th at 10:33 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like after his first and very chaotic week in Washington, brand new U.S. Senator John Husted will say, "You know, Governor DeWine, do you think I could have my old job back?" Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who are making themselves scarce or making themselves very visible whenever big news comes out of the White House. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Attorney General Dave Yost says buying toilet paper in bulk and DEI programs do not mix. But first, it has been a chaotic first 10 days of the new Trump administration. The list of dramatic and disruptive announcements and executive orders is long. Pardons, immigration raids, firings, back to the office orders, renaming a large body of water. It's exhausting for all of us watching and life-changing for those directly involved. Perhaps the biggest move so far came Monday evening when the president froze trillions of dollars in federal grants and loans. He said he wanted to purge the government of what he calls woke ideology. For about 24 hours, just about every agency and organization that receives federal money for its work panicked. The panic didn't last long, however. Late Tuesday, a federal judge temporarily blocked the order, putting it on hold. And then on Wednesday, President Trump said, never mind. His administration rescinded the freeze memo for now. The news prompted advocacy groups into action. They denounced the potential funding cuts, and they tried to explain how these cuts, this freeze, would have hurt average people. One of those groups is the progressive-leaning Policy Matters Ohio, which said the federal freeze could disrupt the Ohio budget process at the State House and jeopardize critical programs. Joining us is the director of Policy Matters Ohio, Hannah Hulbert. Hannah, welcome to Snollygoster.
Oh, happy to be here.
You know, let's start here. I think one thing this memo did and the story that unfolded was it made us all realize again how much federal government money is out there. It touches so many parts of our lives that we are not really aware of.
That's exactly right. You know, so often the services that the public sector provide, the jobs that the public sector is providing for Ohioans, it really goes, under the radar. We take it for granted in a lot of ways. But then whenever there's a threat and we really have to look at what we stand to lose, whenever we don't have that federal spending, whenever the federal government isn't sending back really our tax revenues to the states in the form of program services, jobs, fixing infrastructure, we wake up and we're like, and people are ready to fight for this. Mm-hmm. People really do value the things that the public sector provides.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the state budget, which Governor DeWine is going to unveil his version of the budget in the next week or so. You know, one third of Ohio's state budget comes from the federal budget. It's like pass-through money.
Yeah, that's right. And that money funds a lot of things. So aside from direct payments, you know, we're talking about unemployment administration dollars. So the money that allows the folks in the offices to get those payments out to people that do eligibility. We're talking about payments to childcare providers, Head Start, grants that run cancer support groups and medical research. Yeah. It is literally the sort of fabric that holds together so many of the things that make life comfortable, that make give a lot of folks economic security, provide training for people who are trying to retrain through some of the federal programs. I mean, it's just, there are very few spaces where our daily life isn't enhanced by what's being spent from the federal government.
Yeah, federal money makes up half of Ohio State University's $1.5 billion in research funding, as an example. I mean, they're doing research on all kinds of things, healthcare and you know, agriculture and whatever, the environmental stuff.
It really is incredible. You know, we pulled some, the data is a little old. So back in 22, if we look at federal receipts going into Ohio from 22, and we took out all the COVID money, right? So we're just looking at the regular federal non-COVID spending. You know, Ohio had higher than average. So Ohio had higher than average receipts from the government. That meant we got higher than average direct payments. We got higher than average grants, and we got higher than average wage spending. So Ohio in particular is knitted up with how well we're doing and what kind of legislative decisions Congress is making on that spending.
Yeah, I love it when Governor DeWine and Republican Congress people and senators have a big news conference and they announce all this great program. And for Governor DeWine, it's federal money that he's handing out. I mean, the state administers it and the state decides where it goes. But, you know, a lot of times it's federal programs that they have opposed and they are celebrating it.
Absolutely. You know, when we add all of that stuff together, so we put in the direct payments, our federal budget here in Ohio looks like $14 billion.
Wow.
You can't pull that amount of money out of an economy, whatever your political leanings are, and expect it to be in any way stable.
Yeah. So, here's what the order said. The mandated freeze applies to the issuance of new grant and assistance awards, disbursement of funds on open awards, and other agency actions that may be implicated by the executive orders to the extent permissive by law. So that basically was everything. And one of the things I first thought of course, you think of the programs you mentioned, Head Start, you know, the assistance for needy families, things like that, school lunches. But the first thing I thought of was the CHIPS Act. That's administered by the Department of Commerce. It issues federal grants and loans for, you know, manufacturing computer chips all around the country, including the Intel project here in Central Ohio. I have to assume that would have been affected by that memo.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. The memo was, I don't know if it was designed to be vague, but it certainly was designed to be broad. And if we take the administration's word on things, you know, the point here was to open a witch hunt, to suspend federal spending until they completed whatever kind of review it is to see if the spending passes a personal ideological test. Mm-hmm. Nothing would have been spared. And after the broad, quick public backlash on this, we saw additional guidance trying to walk back some of the freeze language and personal, you know, individual payment language. But what we know actually happened is that Medicaid portals shut down and housing payment portals had shut down. And so it's hard to really figure out what the truth is in all of this mess. But certainly, you know, we heard from folks down in Cincinnati talking about the repairs to the Brent's Bridge. Mm-hmm. That's a boatload of federal dollars going into that long overdue project. Intel, we have new announcements on job creation, whether you agree with them or not. All of those things have been drawn into question.
Now, when this memo first came out, Policy Matters Ohio called on state lawmakers to fight the freeze. Did that happen? Did Republicans in particular in the Ohio legislature publicly or more likely privately call the White House and complain and say, what are you doing?
I hope so. I don't know if they did that privately. I know if I were a staffer in DeWine's office or in OBM this week, I would be having a bad day. It would have been a real rough week trying to sort this out. DeWine has to put his budget proposal out next week. And with so much money in the target for the federal freeze or pause or just review, that has to be a very challenging position. So I am hoping that some of those calls happen privately, but publicly, there, I may have missed it, but I did not see a lot of folks going on the record, particularly from the majority party here, saying that this is a bad move, or even a legal move, or an unconstitutional move.
Yeah, a lot of statements saying we're waiting for more clarification as to what this means, or we don't know what this means. And, you know, in their defense, they didn't know what it meant, but also gave them cover to hope to let the ship pass, which it has, at least for now. But getting back to the federal spending, now you mentioned federal spending just a moment ago, and here's some stats. You know, federal spending has grown very rapidly in the past few years. Federal spending was about $4 trillion when Donald Trump took office in 2017. It is now $7 trillion. That's a 75% increase. Now, some of that is leftover COVID spending. Some of that increase comes because, frankly, more Americans are getting older, retiring, needing more money through Medicare and Medicaid. But government is spending a lot of money. And as blunt an instrument as this was, is it something that needs to be done? Perhaps not quite as blunt as this, but doesn't something need to be done to control spending and to operate more efficiently?
Well, really, the question isn't how is this too much? The question should be, are people's needs being met? You know, we listed off a number of things going on at the top of this conversation, you know, from things like the Intel plant and the CHIPS Act to worker training with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, the repairs to infrastructure, tax credits for purchasing electric vehicles are another one. You know, the question isn't, well, is this is a big number? Should it be a smaller number? The question should be, are we as a nation using our combined resources, which is what our taxes are and what federal spending comes from, to solve the problems that we need solved? And I think a lot of Ohioans and a lot of Americans would say, you know, we're not. You know, you look at the costs of higher education, the levels of student debt, and those are just people trying to get a leg up in the economy. You look at the needs around childcare in this state. You look at teacher retention in this state. You look at our roads, our bridges, our infrastructure, and imagine, are we ready for this economy, for what the future holds? And I think the question is we're not. And so I don't think that we should be thinking about, oh, is just this number too big? America is we have so much wealth in this country, so much incredible wealth. We should not be in a state and we should not be in a place where people are struggling. We shouldn't have bridges that take decades and decades and decades to be repaired.
Voters in November, they put Donald Trump into office, despite all of the baggage that he had, the insurrection, the conviction. They want, I think the message was clear, maybe not a solid majority, but certainly a majority of Americans. They said they want disruption. They want things to change. Can you understand where they're coming from? And they say, you know, he may not be the best messenger, but at least he is going to shake things up.
Oh, I agree with folks who are ready for disruption and for change, because it has taken so long to get this, and I'll be very frank, to get the kind of spending needed that can give regular, everyday working Ohioans a leg up in this economy. The problem here is that I don't think this administration, from what they have demonstrated, just how many days in, 10 days in or so, is really got the policies to do those things. I do think people are seeing, you know, we work harder. We are more productive than ever. In Ohio, you know, we have some of the lowest unemployment rates we have ever seen. And just until last year, we hadn't seen really any wage growth, particularly at the bottom of the income ladder. And those in the middle have just been treading water since like the 70s. And so, yeah, we need something, but I'm not sure this is exactly going to deliver what people really need.
Democrats and, you know, progressives are in a tough spot. Republicans hold the White House, both houses of Congress. They have a solid majority in the Supreme Court. So what should progressives do? Should they fight every single thing that comes out? Should they chart their own path? What do you think is the best strategy as this Trump administration starts to really implement policies?
You know, I think a lot of this, we got to start talking to our neighbors, talking to our friends, our families, talking about program services, what kind of world we want to be in. I don't think we can replicate the sort of constant state of fear and outrage that many of the policies that we've just seen in this week. It's going to be hard to sustain that. But if nothing else, I think that this situation around this memo demonstrates that when you direct that energy and whenever you speak up, and we've heard from, you know, our little policy shop, I heard from people in labor, people in the arts, people across, you know, people who are doing jobs at the county, like people were outraged. People wanted to express and how they valued these programs. And this demonstrates whenever that is turned on and people direct that to the decision makers, it's effective.
How about working with the Trump administration, working with Republicans to try to find compromise on some of these things, try to find efficiencies and reduce federal spending, find a compromise on immigration reform? Is that possible?
Look, I don't think any party or person has a patent on good ideas, and I don't think any one party or person has a patent on all the bad ideas. The problem is that so far we've not seen a lot of room for negotiation, a lot of room for considering opposition or differences of opinion. And truly, one has to wonder that if that's not in part what one of the purposes of this memo is to create a true chilling effect on, you know, those institutions, whether they're public sector, state, local government, nonprofit organizations, other entities that might receive grants, to create a chilling effect on opposition and dissent. Right. Basically saying, hey, we'll figure it out. We'll mess with your money if you don't fall in line with our ideological prerogatives. Many of which, by the way, Ohio voters specifically have rejected. You know, Ohio voters went to the ballot and said, you know, we don't want this attack on reproductive freedom. We don't want that. And yet that is one of the many things that this memo was going to be auditing for and rooting out. And so that's the thing. You can't compromise whenever there's no one interested on the other side of the table.
Our thanks to Hannah Hallbert. She directs the Group Policy Matters Ohio. Hannah, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
Glad to be here.
We'll be right back.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
All right, it's time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. We know that diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are under fire. President Trump issued an executive order ending DEI programs in the federal government and putting employees working in those departments on leave. Now the party that decries government overreach in the private sector is going after DEI programs at private businesses. And Republican Attorney General Dave Yost is joining them. Yost and 18 other GOP attorneys general have sent a letter to Costco, you know, the big warehouse retailer. They demand that Costco end its DEI policies. Yost writes, Costco is clinging to DEO policies courts and businesses have rejected as illegal discrimination. The letter requests Costco to repeal the policies or explain why they haven't, and do so within 30 days. Yost critics say the candidate for governor, yes, he is running for governor, in case you forgot, Yost is just trying to curry favor with Donald Trump to earn his endorsement. Well, this move certainly does not hurt that effort, and for that, Dave Yost earns our Snolligoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snolligoster. We are part of the NPR network. We ask you to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Tell your friends about us, share us on social media, do all that good stuff. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snolligoster from WOSU Public Media.